Welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast from Canberra. I'm Michelle Grattan. The Catholic Church has been at the centre of many damaging claims before the Royal Commission that's looking at child sex abuse. Australia's top Catholic, Cardinal George Pell, faced a tough time in the witness box. Francis Sullivan is the CEO of the Truth, Justice and Healing Council, a group that was established to coordinate the Church's engagement with the Royal Commission and to develop a reform agenda around the handling of child sex abuse. He joins us today. Francis Sullivan, how damaging have been these revelations of extensive abuse in the Australian Church?
It's been very damaging. The history of the Catholic Church in clerical sex abuse has been shocking, and for many decades the Church put its own interests ahead of those of victims. At times there have been cover-ups, there has been the active moving of perpetrating priests from one part of the country to another, and it took until the late 1980s for the Catholic Church to wake up and to move into a much more sophisticated, victims-focused complaints handling process and investigation procedures. So the history is shocking. The last two decades, it's been better. But this Royal Commission is getting into, in a very forensic way, those areas where the Church has been found wanting.
But even on the eve of this commission being set up, when it was being talked about, I recall that Cardinal Pell and others were somewhat sceptical. Is that a fair description?
Oh, I think the Church came kicking and screaming to this Royal Commission. It was quite obvious for me, standing apart from this job at the time, that the Church didn't want a Royal Commission. And it's interesting that Cardinal Pell, in his evidence the other day at the Royal Commission, said for a long time the view in the Vatican was that media and others who were criticising the Church were seen as enemies of the Church. So the message really wasn't coming home that there was a real problem. Now, that isn't the situation in Australia, but in the early years, I think the Church certainly circled the wagons to protect itself rather than admit that there was a problem and they needed more than themselves to help solve it.
And why do you think they did this? Because clearly in the end it was going to catch up with them.
Well, I think like all big institutions, particularly big conservative institutions, there is a tendency, a culture, to avoid scandal of the institution. And sometimes that blinds leaders and others as to what is really necessary for the common good, not just for the institution. And I think the pressure, which was most evident in the media for many years, but intensified in the last few, brought others like politicians and eventually prime ministers and premiers to the point that an inquiry of the nature of a Royal Commission was not only needed, but is necessary, because this isn't just a social issue, it's a political issue. And child sex abuse, we know, is widespread in the community, in the domestic sphere, but this inquiry is only at the institutional level, and it's going to be big enough in dealing just with institutions.
Do you think that the Church now is being totally frank, or is it still self-protective in certain areas about this?
Well, the reason I have this job is that the Church leadership, that were the bishops and the religious leaders, when the Royal Commission was announced, made it abundantly clear that despite what was said before it, they were going to fully embrace it and be open and transparent. Now, in order to demonstrate that that was dinkum, they said we would move to lay experts to guide that. The council that I run is populated with lay experts. We've made it abundantly clear that each time the Catholic Church turns up at the Royal Commission, It turns up to fess up. It turns up to explain. It turns up to hear its failures broadcast broadly. It's a necessary first stage, if you want to use an old religious term, in a process of atonement. They need to fess up.
This must be very difficult for the church hierarchy, who haven't been used to fessing up.
This is extraordinarily difficult for the church hierarchy. It's extraordinarily difficult for the 5.5 million people who call themselves Catholic, because in a sense, this reveals the erosion of trust and credibility that not only churchgoers feel, but those Catholics that have voted with their feet and the broader community, who expect far more from religious institutions than how this has been handled.
Do you think this will lead many people to turn away from the church?
I think we know it already is happening. The Catholic Church in Australia regularly runs its own surveys of participation and attitudes and so on. And 5 years or 6 years ago, when they asked people, "Are you Catholic?" and someone goes, "Yes." Well, "Do you practice?" And that was defined as going to church once a month. You know, 5 years ago, that rate was around 18% of Catholics. These days, that figure is around 10%. That's quite a massive demographic change in attitude and behaviour. And you would be a mug to think that the scandal of clerical sex abuse hasn't contributed massively to that change in participation.
Now, one of the high-profile cases that's been aired during these inquiries is that of John Ellis, to whom George Pell has issued an apology. Could you just outline for us something of that case?
John Ellis was abused as a very young boy. He was actually an altar boy, and the abuse that he was subjected to lasted throughout his teenage years into his adult life by a Father Duggan. He was a very interesting, if you like, combination of factors. He was a very devout religious Catholic. He was an extraordinarily intelligent, high-achieving person and a lawyer. And he approached the church back in 2002 with these allegations. He did so in the knowledge that the church would approach his case with its complaints handling system, which is called Towards Healing. And what we saw in the hearing was how the church bungled that up for many years. The duress and stress that John Ellis was put under whilst the church mishandled its administration of the case. So much so that eventually John Ellis felt compelled to move proceedings into litigation. And then the hearing heard how the litigation process was likewise mishandled, that positions were taken by the church at law which were acceptable, but clearly, and church leaders including the cardinal admitted, was not the Christian way to go. And so we saw a man who had been subject to gross abuse for many years feel that from 2002 to 2009 he was legally abused by the church. It was a very sad, it was a heart-rending hearing. You're right, the cardinal formally apologised to John Ellis for the failures of the Archdiocese of Sydney, for his lack of taking responsibility, for others in his charge and their lack of taking responsibility. And the whole tale is in the history books, because the way the church took particular legal defences has now become known as the Ellis defence.
It's easy for people, though, to be sceptical of the church's current apologies and saying, well, we were wrong, we've mended our ways, isn't it? Because there was so much resistance to doing the right thing. And now when, in a way, people are cornered, they do the right thing.
Yes, exactly.
But do they mean it?
Well, there's a couple of points there. When you go to these hearings, they are intense and you are under a lot of personal scrutiny and you're also under oath. And the forensic examination by Peter McClellan and counsel assisting is persistent. It's quite obvious that people are laying their life open no matter what they're talking about. So firstly, I think people are telling the truth. I think when they say they failed and they're sorry, they mean it. But the Catholic Church has made many apologies over many years to many people. Sometimes they're public apologies, often private. The cynicism and the scepticism which the Church receives in this area is because, one, people have not seen the Church act in a consistent way with victims or in an open, transparent way. Two, after a while, words seem to be hollow and people are looking for action. And that means they want to see the Church, in a sense, place itself in a vulnerable position rather than appearing to always be, you know, clever and protective. And until people see that, I don't think they in their hearts will say that the Church has actually been upfront enough.
You know George Pell very well. He's now gone off to a new job in Rome. What effect do you think this whole process has had on him?
Well, I don't know him that well, but I have been involved with the process for him in lead up to the Ellis case, and I've had dealings with him in the last year in the overall approach of the Church. I have found him actually to be sincerely committed to getting this out and getting the whole issue confronted in the public domain. I have found him extraordinarily cooperative when I've been pushing for change, micro or major. I think it's been very exacting on him as a person. I saw him in the hearings. You know, it takes a lot out of a person, particularly an elderly man. He's in his 70s and he's got a lot on his plate besides. But he made himself available for as much as the commission wanted. They, because of their timetable, changed the dates a number of times and he accommodated every time. I think also, though, when you look at it in the broad, this is a terribly humbling moment for church leaders, of which he is clearly the most senior. And to have to confront that failure on any level for anybody is very exacting.
Now, we've been hearing a lot about the past. How confident can we be that child sex abuse is not happening in the church now in its institutions?
Well, the worrying thing was that recently one of the hearings in the Royal Commission involved a Catholic school in Toowoomba where the events occurred in the 2000s. And the Catholic Church put in place very strong protection measures and safeguarding measures in the early to middle 1990s and felt we'd turned the corner. But to have a case like that turn up, it was really shocking. A lot of the school system and most institutions in the church are subject to regulation and protocols from authorities and ombudsmen and people like that. So things are a lot tighter and there's a greater awareness about child safety and safeguarding. There's constant in-servicing of staff and the like. I'm confident to say it is a markedly different and safer environment than it was 20 years ago. But I'm not going to say anything more than that at the moment because, you know, the nature of sex abuse is that it's a private, secret thing. And organisations, no matter if they're churches or government agencies, have to be resolute in their oversight and in their probity about what's going on.
On the question of compensation, how do you think this should be handled in the future?
Well, the Catholic Church has been running its own reparation system now for a good 20-odd years, and that's involved doing its own investigations, determining what payments should be and then paying. Increasingly, a lot of people coming towards the church don't want to participate in that. They want quasi-legal negotiations and mediations or even going down the path of civil litigation. So the days of the Catholic Church investigating itself are over. The best way forward is that there is some independent body. Now, some people would call that the police, but in a lot of cases, it's very difficult to prevail in courts. So therefore, some sort of independent statutory body that will do the investigating, the determining, the quantifying of compensation, and then the church will do the paying.
So do you think that some sort of national system will come out of this commission, or will the institutions themselves determine how that works?
Well, that is a big question, and I think Peter McClellan, who's the judge running this Royal Commission, has signalled a number of times in his hearings that he will be examining the concept of national redress. Now, for it to occur, though, it will need the cooperation of all institutions, including the government agencies that have been running children's services, where, of course, there's been abuse there as well. So all participating institutions may have to play into a national redress scheme. How it's organised will fall on the table of the Attorney Generals. So we've written to the Attorney Generals already, asking them to get in front of the game somewhat and put on their work timetable and schedule, looking at how a national redress scheme can work for victims of child sex abuse. And I've been getting encouraging noises back from some, and simply asking them to, when they next meet, which I think is probably around July, that they take this seriously and look at starting a working party.
This would cost a very great deal, wouldn't it?
Yes.
How would the payment be worked out, the contributed payments from the institutions? Would it be government money as well?
Any institution will have to find the money. Now, 9 times out of 10, most institutions have insurance. So their insurance cover or other indemnity covers will need to kick in. Yes, government would have to be part of it because child sex abuse occurs in government agencies. And what's good for one has to be good for another. And actually, when you think about it, if it's going to be equitable to victims, it shouldn't matter where the abuse occurred. Your access to compensation should be the same. So in our case, the church will have to front whether it's through their insurer or through the backing of its assets or any other wealth.
Would it have to sell assets?
Some might have to, because thankfully the incidence of child sex abuse hasn't been uniform across the Catholic Church. In the first instance, it's predominantly with the male religious orders and priests. Secondly, it's with specific orders and in some dioceses. So some orders will have an enormous amount of risk, if you like, in what will need to be paid. Some have already paid an enormous amount over the years. And the statutory body will need to determine whether people have been paid before can be paid again, whether some of the cases of the past were inappropriately settled or unjustly settled, and whether they should be reopened. There'll be a lot of pressure around that.
The church has had increasing problems in Australia in recent years, as in other developed countries, of recruiting people to be priests and nuns. Do you think that what's come out about church behaviour has added further to that problem? And where is recruitment at the moment?
Well, recruitment is low at the moment, is my understanding. There are very few, in real term, numbers of people going into seminaries or joining religious orders. That trend has been happening since the 1960s, which is more a trend about the cultural appeal of the church and the lifestyle than it was in the 40s and 50s. That was the peak of participation for priests and religious. So the factors of why the numbers are down are probably more than this issue. However, this issue has further corroded the appeal of being in the church for many.
Do you think that the question of celibacy is at all related to the problems of child sex abuse in the past, or do you think that's a completely separate thing?
No, my personal view is that celibacy is part of the problem, and that the very, very stunted psychosexual development of priests and brothers in the past was a major problem. Because in the end, you had people joining the seminaries when they're 13 years old without any proper education about their own sexuality, their own way of growing up and maturing, their own way of dealing with basic human desires. And then to be thrust into a world where celibacy wasn't an option, for some people, they just couldn't cope. Or how they coped was completely inadequate. So I think it is something that has to be examined, and in the conversation more broadly around the world, it is being discussed. And, you know, we'll wait and see where that goes.
Where is the debate, if there's a debate, in the Australian hierarchy at the moment about the whole celibacy thing?
I'm not sure, to be honest, because I don't sit in those forums and hear that discussion, but certainly as I travel around the country,
around the water coolers of the church.
Well, when I travel around the country giving presentations and the like to ordinary Catholics or priests or heads of agency, I mean, people often bring up this issue.
Francis Sullivan, thank you very much for talking with us, and that's all from the Conversations Politics podcast for today. Thanks to my producer, Matt Dawson. We'll have another interview for you soon.